2026 Zells, welcome back. 10 from 10. It's just new year, same result. Well done. You guys got a great, great result of the weekend. This is Investec Champions Cup fortnight. But to get to the Investec Champions Cup, you've got to do it through the URC. You've got to do it through the top 14. And you've got to do it through the English Prem. So we're going to touch on a few games. Had a wonderful 1 week break. I know you didn't have much of a break. You were doing a lot of analysis.
I'm not sure you had a break, mate. You're looking lean and mean. It looks like you've been in the gym, mate.
Mate, I have. Huh? I mean, I've been to gym. It's a good mate of mine. Spoke to a lot of people. People love us, eh? They came over.
people love us.
They do. They came over to me and they said, listen here. Because obviously you've shot to fame being in that Stormers box.
Right.
And they said, you know, you tell a good story, but enough. We need more insight, analysis from coaches.
This is the wrong people.
So, especially Gil's brother-in-law, yeah. Peterson, based in Wimbledon, London, they were here for holiday. His good mate, Bradley Plyke, is from Durbanville. He put the hammer blow to me.
Really?
Enough storytelling, he said. More of Zells.
There's never enough storytelling.
I want more of Zells. I want more of Zells. You did so much analysis on the Bulls at a time where people thought, why?
Why?
Team that was conceding 5-6 tries a match.
Yeah.
Fading in the last 20 minutes, looking disinterested. 54,000 at the DHL Stadium. South African Derby Day. North versus South. 8-8 going into the last few minutes. One try apiece. Tell us what was different to what happened to what you analyzed.
Mate, what was different was it was two South African teams. They say an earthquake is a great leveler, mate. That's exactly what these derbies are. They are earthquakes. And when these guys come up against each other, I think it very much becomes a game of small margins, especially when you've got 17 Springboks or whatever it was on the field going head to head. There's a lot at stake for the team, for the individual. You know, there's some, I guess, long-term international rugby implications to the outcomes of these games. So I think anytime you have a derby, depending on the makeup of the two teams, it can become very intense and probably for the casual fan, not as exciting, I suppose. So you're not going to see, you know, a bear on roller skates. You're going to see two oaks go toe to toe. Lots of clinching, lots of rib punches. And that's pretty much what we got. And I thought it was a game, probably the penalty count was a bit high. I think almost 30 penalties in that North-South derby. But if you look at the collisions and just the intensity of that game, it was right up there.
Well, speaking to one Gavin Rich.
The great
Gavin Rich, who said it was test match intensity for 40.
Mate, just to...
Gav was very excited about that.
Just to highlight how test match intensity was, Brendan Null was there, mate. I haven't seen him for ages. Great to catch up with him. He was at the game. Gav was there. Stevie Null was there. All the big dogs were there, mate.
The big dogs were there. You were in the coach's box, mate. It was intense. It was brutal. In the Sunday Times piece that I wrote, I said respect for the Bulls and Johan Ackerman's team, reward for the Stormers. I likened it to how we know rugby should be played. That kind of intensity when two heavyweights go up against each other. And for those who want music, who want theatre, who want dance, who want no defence, who want beers and pies, go watch the Cape Town Sevens. But if you want to watch real rugby, Investec Champions Cup style that's coming up now. Best teams play each other. And in their domestic competitions, this was exactly what the build-up to this weekend's Champions Cup needed.
Yeah.
It needed the Bulls to come out and fire some shots, to throw some big, big punches, which they did. And what I loved the most was watching Ackers in the coach's box, looking like the Ackers of old, the Ackers from the Lions, where every now and again he gave a little high five to the guy on his right, a little high five to the guy on his left, even though I went with my left hand there. And then I would see him occasionally dip into his little packet of Biltong and chew it with such contentment. I thought, that is what the Bulls have been missing. And we said it, he inherited two assistant coaches in Andries Beck and Chris Rousseau. The guys who basically wanted Jake out. Why were they going to be any different to the new guy coming in? And what for me was so fundamentally different was just the attitude of the players, the approach of the players. And it looked like there was a singular mindset to the way the Bulls played. as opposed to 15 different ideas or 15 different captains from what we've seen in the competitions pre this game. They had lost 5 on the bounce. It's now 6. But they will take some form of moral victory from this one. Again, I go back to, you say it's South African derby, but what did they fundamentally, the Bulls, do different to what they've been doing all season?
I think a lot of it was game flow. I don't think the Bulls have necessarily changed a lot of what they do. I think there was more, probably some more efficiency around maybe the set piece and some of the stuff that they try and do. But yeah, I don't think it was that the Bulls have changed a lot. I think their line speed was up. So defensively, they're showing a bit more intent. You know, it was carry dominance. It was one of those games where it was really the battering rams against each other. And I think the timing of it also played a part. You know, this North South derby, you don't have to convince the players to get up for this. So the physicality was 100% there. And it was a game with a relatively low volume of kicks. I think historically these kind of games generally are a bit more, the coaches are a bit more pragmatic around how they play. There was quite a lot of carrying in this one. And when you throw in the penalty count in there, it became sort of stop start and then sort of launching from field position. So I'm not so sure you can read too much into what the Bulls have changed just yet, but probably the comfort level that you saw in Akers talks to the comfort level behind the scenes. Maybe, you know, maybe the change has given the guys a new lease on life, you know, and I think maybe you're going to start to see that sort of rebuild. For me, the Bulls and the Sharks are two teams that are definitely on the comeback trail. The Sharks taking major strides forwards with JP Peterson, and I think the Bulls are probably a couple of weeks behind them, but on the same path.
When you look at that Bulls squad, and we've been saying it from the beginning of the season, they would probably have on paper, and I know games are won on paper, the strongest South African squad. The Stormers would say, hang on a second, we may not have the name players you've got, but we are actually performing better. But when you looked at that Bulls match 23, you looked at various other things, you think, how's this team taking 50 at Northampton? How's this team not scoring a point in 40 minutes against Bordeaux? How's this team being blown away by the Lions in the first 25 minutes? And finally, they came together and they kind of gave a compelling performance of guts. And like played for a jersey, played for a coach. That's kind of what I saw in it. I didn't think they were good enough in terms of confidence to win that game because at no stage did they seem to threaten. It seemed to threaten the Stormers. I mean, Ambrose Papi came close, but it would be an individual opportunistic try. Pollard was very clever, read the referee. Such experience from a double World Cup winner against an inexperienced referee to score that try. But when it comes to dynamic, big moments, the Storm was just before halftime and just on the end whistle, 2 more tries. And you always felt they could score from that. But you just never felt that the Bulls were actually going to win that game. They were going to come close to a losing bonus point. Is that fair reflection? Is that my Stormers bias coming?
Well, mate, I think it's a bit of both. Would it be nice if you told me that sort of midway through the game because I was biting my nails there in the Stormers box. Like Dobbo said, he was convinced that the Stormers would win the game and he didn't really feel any pressure from the Bulls in terms of the results.
Tell that to Ali for Mark.
But yeah, that was a tough game, mate. That was a tough game and it's a very, very good result against the Bulls team that's loaded with talent. To your point around, like, how have the Bulls been playing getting such poor results with such great players in the squad? And I think that just highlights the value of coaching. Coaching is very important because you can have the best players on the field, and if they're not all pulling in the same direction or if it's not all gelling, then you're just not going to get the results. So the Stormers, I think, are good sort of showcasing that point in the sense that maybe they don't have a team loaded with Springboks, quite like the Bulls do. But that next man up philosophy I've been talking about and just the depth that's been created in that squad where everybody can play a part and everybody has a role, I think is massive, especially in these long campaigns now going from URC into Champions Cup. You've got to have a full squad of players. You can't just have 15 guys that are the best in the world and then some extras who are passengers. Everybody's got to be able to pull their weight.
But if you look at, again, 54,000 people there, lots watching on television, huge interest in the game. A bit of spice added because there was talk of the SAS that went up to Rassie Rasmus and his assistants. The damage control to say they weren't there all week. Were they not? And the wind. And we know when that wind swirls at the DHL Stadium, it's a very different type of wind. Firstly, you don't see Andre Pollard missing three out of four. You don't see Sasha comfortably missing his touches from a lineout penalty, going for the sideline. A lot of those passes were just going nowhere from both teams because of the wind. So I think that is, people are underplaying just how bad that wind was. Whenever there's rain, people, humidity, slippery ball. But a wind is just the most annoying factor, which brings me to my point. I thought we would see so much kicking from the base. Good contestables in that wind, because the wind would have given the kicking team such an advantage and the chase. Did that surprise you from both sides that there wasn't that kind of on-field rugby IQ intelligence attached to the game, and rather premeditated, this is going to be one by carries and one on the gain line?
Yeah, definitely. I think probably the players wanted to go at each other. I think for the players, it was about the carries and the tackles. For both teams, I think probably. But in terms of the result, in terms of getting the win, if you take a step back, just have more of a helicopter view, I think the kicking game should have been more prominent probably for both sides, especially in those conditions where it becomes a bit more unpredictable. But you also have to think about it. I mean, you know, if it's a bad kick because of the wind, Willie LaRue can hurt you. And if it's a bad kick because of the wind, Warwick Hallant can hurt you. And that both teams have got speed at nine, so any line break can turn into a try. So you can kind of see some of the thinking behind it probably from the players, but I would have thought in such a tight game, especially with once you're 20 minutes in, you can see this isn't going to be a 60-point thriller to play the margins and put the ball into space and put the ball downfield and try to keep the contest on the far side. That would have been the smart thing to do, I would say.
It was an enthralling contest because you look up 30 minutes just before, 29 minutes, 0-0. But it didn't feel like a 0-0 game. And the 29 minutes felt like you were watching this heavyweight clash. For me, it was incredibly positive for South African rugby to have a derby like
that.
Huge for those current Springboks who are playing in a bull side to send a message to other people to say, we're a side who can go on the road and beat anyone.
Yeah.
If we can go to Cape Town and be that competitive, and with a little bit of luck, a kick that had gone over earlier, we could have come away potentially with the win. That to me was hugely encouraging. But for an occasion like this, and everyone knew it was going to be a sellout, 54,000 people, I really felt it needed an experienced referee. Now, I know the only way Griffin Colby becomes experienced is by refereeing these games. But I felt he had no control over the game from the outset. And I don't need you to say this because the next time the Stormers play, you guys get refereed off the pot. But he apologized to the players three times in the first 5 minutes that he had made a mistake. And whether the guy's played 100 tests or he's an under 15 schoolboy, the minute the referee apologizes to him, he feels he's in charge. And I just got the sense that every player then felt he had the right to speak to the referee and challenge the referee and question the referee because he had made so many mistakes early on. I don't think he got a hell of a lot of assistance from his assistant touch judges, but I know he got a hell of a lot of assistance from Maurice Jonker because there were so many referrals against to the TMO. I mean, I even take the Ambrose Papi score. It was so obvious that he hadn't grounded the ball, and even though it's just centimeters, it was over. We spent 2 minutes looking at that from every different angle. And I to give 30 penalties, I think it was 16 to the Stormers and 14 to the Bulls. And it became for me just like it was like this contest between referee and player in the end. And every player was having a chat. And he was on first name terms with every player. And they were on first name terms with him. And I just felt he had the surname Colby, but didn't have the performance.
Do you feel better now that you said that?
I do. And it's like not to have a go at him.
Yeah.
Because he did the best that he could do. But for big games like that, you really wanted a Jaco Paper type character in there. And I think the game would have been different. There would have been a lot more discipline. And the best referees let players know very quickly that they're in charge. And I just felt that was like 30 big boys going for it at second break without teacher or principal supervision. And fair play for anyone who was going to get in there. And everyone was calling for the TMO. Everyone was like, knock on ref, forward ref. And then the one guy says, Audrey Smith comes on and just says, for F's sakes, that was a forward and a knock on. He's like, don't talk to me like that. Penalty. Next one's a yellow card. Like if you're going to give a yellow card for that, man.
Yeah.
You know, come on. So you can't start a game and apologize three times in the first 5 minutes. I mean, the props, Nietlin and Wolko were having a field day educating this guy about prop play, okay? And putting so much doubt into his mind. So, I just felt that the occasion demanded better officiating. And I don't say he was biased at all. I don't say he was incompetent. I just felt the occasion was maybe a little bit big for him, and hopefully he learns from that.
I'm just relieved, mate, when Willy kicked that cross kick, mates, and it sailed into touch. It was just a huge sigh of relief. Very happy to bank the win. And then, like Rito said in the coaching box, just have a look up, boys. These stands are full. Look at all the supporters here. Soak in the moment. I thought that was quite poignant. You know, that it, you beat the Bulls, regardless of when, where, how, or why. It's a moment to celebrate.
Well, it's 10 from 10 for the Stormers, yeah. 8 in the URC, 2 in the Vesta Champions Cup. It's incredible start. They've beaten two French teams. They've beaten two Welsh teams, two Italian teams, and two South African teams. We know, and we're going to chat more in depth about that on Thursday. They go to the Stoop in London to play their first English team, Harlequins, who started the week well by sending out a press release. 2 from 9 in the domestic championship to apologize for being awful. And what did you say? The first comments?
Mate, the comments were just like, yeah, thanks for telling us that you guys are terrible, but what are you going to do about it? You know, what is the plan? How do we come back from this?
I mean, that's going to be an interesting matchup for the Stormers, because teams do tend to rally when the club owner sends out a little final warning.
Yeah, jobs are on the line.
Jobs are on the line this weekend, yeah, okay? Yeah. But also never an easy place for South African teams to play, is to go to the Stoop and to go to London, but there should be great Stormers support. We look at the other one, and I couldn't believe this. I couldn't believe the lack of rugby intelligence.
What?
When it came to the Sharks against the Lions.
Yeah.
You've got the bonus point in the bag, 22-18. You're playing with one player up. Just the Lions are a team who can score from anywhere at any occasion. They do it often in the 79th minute. They score a 7-pointer. Secure, at best, 3 points. The draw and the bonus point try. And Jordan Hendrickson wasn't kicking well. He kicked 1 from 4 in terms of conversions. But 2 of the 3 penalties they turned down were smack bang right in front of the poles, which would have taken them out to 25-18. And they turned it down. They went for the line-out, cocked it up. And you just knew something was going to happen in that 79th minute that was going to put the Lions on the attack. And fair play to the Lions. Hashim Peed, straight on, scores. And as someone said, why is he not playing from the beginning? Because of a guy called Morne van der Berg, who's a Springbok. Okay?
Yeah, yeah.
There's a reason he's not playing at the moment.
Yeah.
But brilliant from the Lions not to go away in that game.
Brilliant.
To come back and win. But just poor, poor decision-making on the field from the leadership of the Sharks, as far as I was concerned.
Yeah, so for me, I'm always going to say it. I, you know, if you feel like you have at least an 80% chance or a 75% chance of converting a penalty, I would always take the 3 points, unless the time on the clock is less than the deficit on the scoreboard. So, but you say that, mate, the Stormers did something similar and Evan Roos scored a try and people were, you know, elated the Stormers won that game. So in hindsight, it's easy to say they should have taken the points. But in the moment, these coaches, you know, they sort of ride the emotion of the moment and they ride the game flow of the moment. And you kind of live and die on those things, I suppose.
I think it's an all a blur for you because Ntuna scored the try.
Yeah, yeah, sorry.
Evan Roos was...
Sorry.
Did you see that second?
Yes, I did see the second half, mate.
The context there was it was 8-all.
Yes.
I could understand why the Stormers didn't go for post because both penalties were like 5 to 15 in. And in that wind, Sasha had kicked 1 from 3. There was no guarantee you would get it. He gets it. They've got to go back and exit and spend 2 minutes defending.
Yes.
At 11-8, there's a good chance it becomes 13-11, and they don't get back again. So I understood them saying, worst case scenario, we'll get out of this game with 2 points and an unbeaten record intact. And then backing the lineup more. These other guys, there were still 10 minutes to play when they turned down 3 points. And this weird thing about this absolute disdain and distaste for being given 3 points. Like, I'm not going to take it. And then when they eventually do score from the lineup, it's like, what do you say now? Well, wow. You could have been 9 points up by the time you went and took that line-out try. So I just felt win the game first before going for your fifth try.
Take the point. I always say take the points, man. Nine times out of 10, you're going to come out. Well, I don't know if it's nine times out of 10, but generally the majority of the time, you'll come out with the points positive, a net positive on that. Because at the end of the day, a try is not 7 points. A try is 5 points. You still got to kick those two. And that same kicker who you're doubting, which is the reason you're putting the kick into touch for the line out, is the kicker who's going to have to convert it to make it 7. So you're looking at 5 points versus 3. And in terms of the volume of kicks that you get at goal, 2 penalties is 6, 1 try is 5. I don't know. For me, it's an obvious. You always take the 3.
But if I go back, and the Stormers are the benchmark at the moment, 10 from 10 in all competitions, what's been consistent with you guys is how many times you have taken the option of a 3 in a specific game.
Yeah.
I mean, the Lions game specifically, a couple of weeks
ago. No, God was good on that.
It's like, it's there. Yeah. Take it and continue to build pressure.
Build pressure, yeah.
There is a thing that the captain and the leadership will trust the momentum on the field. But I just felt that the Sharks needing home wins, desperate to get that against an opponent who doesn't go away, who can trouble them. At 22-18, 25-18, they have to chase the game. Now they need a converted try just to get a draw out of this game. 22-18, they feel they can still win that game through a mistake. And it came through a mistake from the Sharks. Mm. Being elaborate, you know, it's like they just weren't at their best. They started badly, 15-0 down, came back well, got the advantage of a red card, and then for me, blew it. And again, JP Peterson was proud of his players for the way they came back, spoke well of them. If this was John Plumtree, he would have said, what the hell was going on there? We need to be consistent in our condemnation of poor decision making.
Yeah, I think, look, when JP, mate, if JP says to the media what he says to the team behind closed doors, maybe different things. I think what hurt the Sharks the most was the red card to Ruan Fenter, mate. Because I don't know what it is. You're on a field with 30 players. The other team loses one guy. Okay, one player. So now you've got 29 players on the field. And then the teams change what they do to try and take advantage of the numerical advantage. Now, if you've got a plan that you believe is going to give you victory over 15 opponents, surely that plan will be even more effective against 14 opponents. You don't need to change what you're doing to try and take advantage of that. I think I remember when I was helping Gary with USA Eagles.
That's Gary Gold.
Gary Gold. We did like a little research project on points scored during yellow cards. And we found that the team that didn't concede the yellow card actually had a negative points average during that period because they tried to change what they were doing to take advantage of the numerical advantage. And it just backfired. So if the other team concedes a yellow or a red card, don't change anything you're doing. Just keep hammering with the same plan and the numerical advantage will come to you. Don't try and chase after it. That'd be my advice. I think the Sharks kind of got their tails up in that moment. They thought, ooh, we're going to, their biggest enforcers off the field, let's take advantage. I think if they just stuck to what they were doing, the scoreboard would have come to them.
All right, you've seen the Lions. You guys played them a fortnight ago. We saw this in the derby again in Durban. They were pushing the Stormers at the end. Could potentially have come out of that game with something. And then they won it in the 81st minute in Durban.
Yeah.
Why can they do that against very good opposition, loaded with Springboks, and then they go and get rolled by Benetton at home?
Yeah.
They get rolled by Newcastle Red Bull. What is it in that... in their cornflakes.
Yeah, in their hot dogs, mate. The Lions are famous for their hot dogs.
What is it that this team goes from granite to putty?
Yeah.
The minute they're not playing a South African
team. So I think those are the intangibles, right? You're playing a South African team, the emotion is in it, the heart rate's up, the focus is there, and I think also the familiarity. You know what to expect. You know what's coming. There are no surprises. You don't really have to problem solve in the game or deal with ambush situations because you know exactly what this other team does. So it's just about execution and can you bring it emotionally. So you play a team you don't really know very well against players that you don't rate or don't think you're measuring yourself against them. And I suppose maybe that can account for some of the dip in performance. But the Lions are a very savvy team. Chris Smith makes them more dangerous because in games with tight margins, he's the guy who puts the ball between the uprights, and he was the difference in this game, even though it was Pede that scored at the end, a great cracking try. Probably unsportsmanlike conduct there from Pede. You do not take advantage of a tight-head prop on the short side, mate. That's just, it's just not how you do it, man. It's not cricket, but great try from him.
He wouldn't have if it was Wilco Lowe.
But what I can say about Pete is, like, you know, there's times where the public really, like, nails it. Maybe not for the right reason, but the rugby fans know this is an Oak who's a difference maker. You've got to get him on the field. And, yes, he is playing by Morde van den Berg, but this is a guy you want to see him touch the ball because he is a difference maker.
Well, you did say after they won the Under-20 World Championship, get him in and get him in as soon as possible.
Yeah, get him on the field, mate. Get him sweating in the jersey and get him doing some damage. That's what he does.
So two great derbies in terms of representation for South Africa. Both went right down to the wire, which is a good thing. There were no blowouts. But interesting in the rest of the leagues, if you look at top 14, you look at the Prem, and you look at the URC, and as we say, those are the three competitions you've got to do well in to get into the Investec Champions Cup. We saw La Rochelle concede 60 points against Toulouse a couple of weeks ago. Antoine Dupont was outstanding. And then this week, they put 66 points past Toulon. That is the La Rochelle side. Then you see Bath taking a beating from a Northampton Saints side that rested six or seven of their main line players at home at the Rec, which stunned everyone. And then you get a side like Bristol who are flying, and they would have thought this is a gimme going to Loftus to beat the Bulls. And all of a sudden, the Bulls, Uckers has come out.
They're back, baby.
I'm playing my best possible 23 in these two games in the Investec Champions Cup to give us a chance of qualifying, because they believe they can go anywhere in the last 16 and win.
Mm.
And if they've got to take the campaign on the road, they believe they can do so and actually get into that group. So
I also think for Uckers, he's got to have more of a short-term view now, because this is a team that has maybe having a bit of a crisis of confidence. So he needs to build momentum now, regardless of what the implications are down the road in terms of player rotation and fatigue. And he needs the Bulls to start stringing wins together immediately. And I think putting his best out there and putting his best foot forward in the Champions Cup this week is a great call.
And also, you know, they do get a result against Bristol. They go to Power, who are second on the table in the top 14. They've kind of like sent their second stringers away from home and taken beatings, but at home they've been strong.
Yeah.
In the top 14, just got edged by Northampton Saints in the opening game of the Domestic Champions Cup. But so many enticing and thrilling matchups that are going to happen this weekend in that decisive third week of the Investec Champions Cup. But if you go back again to derbies and what happened in the URC, and you look at the Irish derbies as well, very similar to our derbies, you look at the Welsh derbies, the Dragons.
Mate, the Dragons are flying.
They're just flying. Popping everyone. Okay? Oh, they hadn't had a win for like 400 days or something. So I looked at Ulster again, hammering Munster 28-3.
Ulster's a team, mate.
You know, they six from eight. They're second on the table. You look at just how Leinster had to really put it in to get the win against Munster away from home at Thornmond Park. The one team there that you think, wow, what's going on? Stuart Lancaster, the big name coach signing. Connacht, they're getting pumped. But those derbies are a huge leveler, especially in the terms of the competition.
Yep.
And the New Zealand side used to say that in Super Rugby when they're playing the doubleheader, is the advantages to the Australian sides, because the Reds, for example, are playing the Force. The Crusaders are playing the Chiefs twice. So there's a good chance of losing a few games there.
Ironic that they would say that, because the South African teams are playing each other twice too, mate.
Exactly.
One of the most brutal rugby on the planet.
Exactly. So when I just looked at the level and the competitiveness, and then you tell me as well, how hard was it to adjust from going from beating the Lions, now you're in that Stormers setup, just before New Year, and then you've got to come out of the old year into the new year and play the Bulls. And the turnaround time was 10 days or whatever, but basically three training sessions. Mm. How did the coaching setup deal with that mindset?
Yeah, I think probably the break may have made it a bit easier, because we were supposed to play the Bulls just after Christmas, and then that game was pushed back. That round eight game was pushed back to March, I think. And I think that would have been tough, is sort of going back to back like that for such a massive game at that time of the year. But having the break actually gave the guys, I think, an opportunity to just do a bit of a recharge, freshen the brain a bit, and then come back for a big week against the Bulls. I think that actually made it easier. And also, it's the kind of thing there, even though you are on holiday, you're lying on a lie low in the pool, in the back of your brain, you know the Bulls are coming. And it just gives you that sort of, they're not on your doorstep. It's not like, okay, yay, high five, we just beat the Lions, now we're playing the Bulls. I think that opportunity to just recharge was massive for us, and probably for the Bulls as well. But having to do it back to back to back to back that must be tough. I mean, I can only imagine in all of these derbies. And I think that's probably why the underdog teams are ambushing sides. Like you see in the top 14, top two teams, Toulouse, Pau, both lost at the weekend. For the underdog teams, it's probably easier to get up because you're not thinking about the length of your campaign. Every game is like a World Cup final for you because you're just battling for, you're desperate. You just want to get some respect. So these derbies definitely make it tougher.
But now all festivities are over. Boxing Day is come and gone. Christmas has come and gone. New Year's come and gone. Now it's full on again. Eh? It's full on till the end of June. And then we go into the test season. It's going to be a full on 11 months of effectively international rugby. And then we look again, it's December, and we're right back to where we were a month ago. Investec Champions Cup rugby and a little bit of URC chucked in. If you look at the round of South Africans, of those two matches, were there any big winners for you? And maybe a play or two, because Rassie would have looked at those games and thought, this is as close as these guys will get to test rugby, those who haven't necessarily been in the front line, and probably tougher. I mean, you playing Wales, 73-0 at Cardiff. This was a test match in Cape Town. That wasn't a test match in terms of the intensity. Mm. Him looking at players, do you think he would have said, I like that, or that's a bit of a red flag? Or he knows exactly what he's got him?
No, look, Rusty knows exactly what he's got in everybody, but I think a guy who he knows extremely well, who hasn't been in the box setup and hasn't been on the radar for whatever reason, but has been a consistently good player, if not necessarily world-class for most of his career, and who was an absolute villain on the day for us on Saturday, was Jandre Rudolph. I thought he had an absolute cracking game, forced some great turnovers, was a real, real menace. And there's a guy who's not sort of in his physical prime, you know, but is playing some great rugby. So I don't know whether Jandre is going to crack the nod, but that's a classic. Isn't that a classic Swiss Army knife kind of player that Rassie really enjoys in the Quagga Smith kind of mold? Can force turnovers, can carry, can tackle, ferocious, never quits. I thought he had a cracking game.
I also thought he was very good. And you mentioned Quagga Smith, and watching him, I thought, you know, he's got the look of Quagga. He plays like Quagga. And here's poor Evan Ruiz having a cracker and another one down in the pecking order. Puts him down at about number 9.
Evan had a great game.
Evan was outstanding. And you know what, guys? Whether he plays for the Springboks or not, that's not the point I'm making. I thought he was outstanding. No, he was disciplined. He carried well. I thought Andre Jugafenta carried well.
Paul de Villiers, mate. What a difference.
And Paul de Villiers, when he comes on, he's certainly a player that is asking questions of the national setup and asking questions in terms of how they identify players. Mm. And I just want to know, what's his hooking skills like? Because exactly. He's got to be multifaceted.
Can't you throw in? No, he's great, mate.
He's got to go in there and say, I can play that role for you. I can also play 9. I can also play 2. Because if you're multifaceted and multi-talented, you just get yourself that extra boost to get into the box squad. But
Manny Chituka, mate, add him to the list of blokes in the queue for number 8. I've been saying it for some time. I think that guy is going to do great things between now and the next World Cup. I don't know if he features in Rusty's plans, but I think he's a very, very good rugby player and a difference maker, versatile, power carrier. He's put also more heavy-handed probably and already a Springbok. But I just had a sneaky suspicion about Manny making a late charge. So let's see. I don't know. He was good again on the weekend for the Sharks. And I think him and his boots are central to that resurgence under JP.
And then we speak about individuals. I mean, Wilco, 69 minutes, just outstanding. Yeah. He's a destroyer. But all credit to Ali Vermaak. He lasted 25 minutes, but he took on 5 scrums. And I think it's his neck that went, huh?
I think it may have been an ankle thing.
Ankle, okay. Yeah. Well, the weight of the neck onto the ankle.
Yeah. Weight of Wilco's neck.
But I just thought, you know, for a guy at that age to be doing that against a guy like Wilco. But it must be comforting for you guys to know that that guy's going to be your tight head and on the tight head side next season. To have a combination of him and Nietlin, I mean, that would scare most opposition.
Yeah, and Ali Vermaak, I mean, mate, you never want to see an injury, but there's a guy who actually scrummed against Wilco for years at Western Province and at the Stormers, and it's a pity. I mean, like I say, it's always a pity when there's an injury, but specifically because it would have been great to see those two old mates go for 80 or 65 minutes.
All right, but all things considered, I mean, the Stormers are off to play Harlequins. The big one for social media. I mean, I know the Bulls are hosting Bristol Bears, but the big one for social media is, who are the Sharks and who is tuna.
Who is tuna?
Because it's the Sale Sharks against the Hollywood Bet Sharks.
The Tuna Bowl.
Marco Mazzotti, the owner of the Sharks based in Durban, keeps on saying, change your name. Tuna's not a bad thing. You can't be the Sharks, the Sale Sharks. I know, chatting to the boys from Sale when we were doing the Investor Champions Cup kind of preview in London, they are waiting for that game because they want to make a statement that there should be only one Sharks playing in the competition, and it's the Sale Sharks. So that match in Manchester is going to be bigger in a rugby terms than Man United playing Manchester City in soccer.
Right.
But it's going to be a cracker. And I'm going to be very interested in following those handles this week, because when I did see Marco's wish list for the new year, he said, please give up the name, except that you are Tuna and that we are the real Sharks.
Mate, it's the same in Joburg this week where the Lions play Lyon, mate. The same bragging rights are up for grabs, I suppose. I mean, I know Lyon is not Lion, but Lions and Lyon, mate, the big cats are going to have to come to the fore.
All right, the big cats will be back. Talking of big cats, Zell's the biggest cat. We'll be back. We'll be back on Thursday where we preview the round three of the Investec Champions Cup. There are some thrilling matchups. It's the decisive round. For now, URC is parked for two weekends. The Storm is 8-8, leading the way. The only team still unbeaten in all competitions in Europe. The Lions are into the top eight of the URC. There is going to be a resurgence from the Bulls. And the Sharks, they are a team on the up.